Good morning. Welcome to Lincoln County Connections. And Amy Snyder is back with us today. She is the Health Promotions Program Manager for Lincoln County Health and Human Services. Good morning, Amy.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
You're back. Well, and we've got a lot to talk about. The work you're doing, vaccinations, how to get vaccinated, on and on. We're going to cover a lot today. But I do want to say that you're one of the first people that's ever came into the studio with a microbe. A stuffed, puffy microbe. Who's your friend today? Who is that?
I have a little COVID virus with me, but it's a safe COVID virus because it's a plush. So it's from Giant Microbes, and it's just a little replication of what a COVID-19 virus looks like. I got it for Christmas, and I'm going to give it to our communicable disease nurses so they can put it with the rest of the ones that we work with.
Your plushy friend there, as a result of COVID, this virus icon is more places than we would have ever imagined seeing a virus. And part of what you're doing has been explaining the virus. In many conversations I've heard in your outreach, could you talk about, is it health literacy part of what we're trying to do through your work?
Yeah, health literacy is definitely a key part of it. With health literacy, it's making the information more accessible to individuals. And especially when we're working on our own health, our health literacy is actually a little bit lower when we're in a situation like this where there's panic and there's fear. And then we really have to sort through truths from misinformation. And so there's a lot to work with. And so my role as a doctor of public health, as a social scientist, and as a public health professional is to sort through that information and make sure that the accurate information is being shared in a way that's accessible and really oriented in where that information come from, because we can make a lot of assumptions that aren't accurate. Yeah. And that's part of my role, and our team's role is really to get the information out there in a way that's consumable.
Why is it different in these circumstances with COVID, say compared to health promotions outside of our work with COVID?
There's many, many factors at play. One, the World Health Organization has a term for this called infodemic. So when we have a pandemic, there comes with it a wave of an info pandemic or infodemic, where you have just an onslaught of information coming from all different directions with conflicting information. None of it really makes sense. It's not complete or whole. And that's because we don't understand yet what we're really working with. And for us as scientists, we are very cautious about the truths that we say. We want to make sure that it's accurate. We always have doubt, because that's the nature of science, is to doubt things. So we test and retest. And we're only going to say with confidence something that we know to be true, that's been evidence-based, that's been found to be true, not just once, but over and over and over again. So we always have that doubt. And then what happens is people fill those gaps with assumptions or with hypotheses that they speak about as if they're truth. So it just creates a lot of confusion. And so whenever we have a pandemic, we're going to have confusion that comes with it. And we have this with any kind of topic. We do a lot of work with tobacco prevention. And there's a lot of that still with tobacco prevention, even though we've been working on that for 100 years. You know, and we know a lot about it. And there's not a lot of mysteries. But we still have that same kind of gap and misconception that gets pulled into those gaps.
Oh, man. It makes me think of the beginning of the pandemic. Thankfully, we've learned so much, but boy, it was a different, the panic, you know, the uncertainty. Those were some hard months.
Yeah. And I feel for all of our medical professionals, there's something called a moral injury that happens with, you have a medical professional who's trained to know everything they need to know to treat people. And they have an oath to treat people, to do no harm. And everything that was in their protocols to possibly do at that moment was not working. And so they had to resort to trying out different things. And those weren't working, and nothing was really going the way you would have assumed based on every other disease that we have. SARS-CoV-2 reacted very differently than we expected it to. And so there was a lot of learning to be happening, and you don't want that to happen when people are at their most vulnerable state, and your job and your entire life purpose is to help that person and to prevent death and prevent, you know, becoming on a vent and not being able to be taken off that vent. So I feel for a lot of our medical professionals who are really at the front line of that, as bad as it was or as tough as it was for us in public health and not knowing how to respond to this. And at least we had models from in past respiratory pandemics to be able to know that isolation, quarantine always works. And we know that, mask wearing and social distancing, we know all of those tools that we have in public health, they will always work. However, in medicine, they were in a completely unknown area.
Vaccine safety, some concern around there. Your presentations have discussed why they're safe. Could you just give us a plug why this is a safe and good thing to do?
Yes. So no intervention is going to be approved by the Federal Drug Administration if it's not safe. Mm. There are multiple levels of research that's done with an intervention like a vaccine before it gets approved for emergency use. So when we have the FDA emergency use authorization, we know that that device, that medicine, or that vaccine is safe and effective. For the three vaccines that are approved for emergency use authorization, they've all been tested in multiple research studies to this point and with hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of people in those studies. And that's much larger than we normally have with our typical type of authorization. So even though the timeline moved a little bit faster, that was because we just prioritized it. And we funded, for one of the first times in history, a public health intervention at a level that made it as effective at getting it produced as it is at working when it's into people. So that was, really a tremendous feat of us as a nation to be able to really prioritize this public health intervention. And that's part of why we know it's going to be effective, because all eyes were on these vaccines.
Yeah. And the science had been evolving anyways, correct?
Yes. Yeah. The mRNA science has been in the works for a decade. The companies that have produced the mRNA vaccines have had many years of development in leading up to that. So it's not a completely novel technology.
Yeah. Amy Snyder, she is the Health Promotions Manager, Lincoln County Health and Human Services. Let's take our first break, come back and maybe talk about the types of vaccines you can receive and then where you can get them. So stay with us. Back on Lincoln County Connections, Amy Snyder with us today. Health Promotions Program Manager, Lincoln County Health and Human Services. So, Amy, there are three primary vaccines. What makes them different? Tell us about that.
For the three vaccines that we have that are approved for use in the United States, there's two mRNA vaccines, and that's the Moderna and that's the Pfizer vaccine, and those are both in two doses. Those are the ones that are a little bit more difficult for us to administer because they have to remain frozen for a long period of time. They have to be thawed, and then they're only viable for a short period of time. And that's just because they're fragile. They're a piece of mRNA wrapped in some cholesterol, and they just have to be frozen because it keeps them stable and safe. And we want to make sure we do that. And then we have a third vaccine that's just recently been approved. That's the one-dose vaccine. It's Johnson & Johnson. And that one's what we call a viral vector vaccine. It's a tongue twister.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so that one takes a weakened adenovirus, which is a common cold virus that's been weakened and it cannot replicate. And it does something similar in that it teaches your body to start making that same protein that's on the outside of the virus. It's that halo, the corona, that gives the name the coronavirus. It creates that protein and it teaches your body to look for it and it gets the antibodies developed for it. And then it creates the memory cells that are on the lookout for the next time it sees it, which might be when you get exposed to that virus again, the real virus. And then it's ready to launch that response. And that's why you may still get an infection of COVID, but you aren't going to get the symptoms, or you're going to have a really minor illness because your body was primed for it and it didn't let that virus replicate as much as it could have if you didn't have those antibodies ready and if you didn't have those memory cells on the lookout for them.
Got you. And just skipping ahead to the Johnson & Johnson, we're trying to kind of use this for certain groups where possible. Many may be getting Moderna, might want Johnson & Johnson, but how do we make sense out of all this?
The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, that's the one dose. It also, because it's a viral vector, it's a little bit more shelf stable, so it doesn't have to be frozen. The timeline's a little bit longer, so we can actually go out into the community. We can go to people's homes. Those who are not physically able to get to a clinic, we can go to their homes and administer the vaccine. for those who may be living in far out rural areas and they don't have the transportation, we can go out to those areas with this vaccine. It's a one dose. So for people that are really mobile, like our fishing community and our farm workers, we can go out to them and we can give this one dose to them. So this is really a game changer for us in public health as far as getting these vaccines distributed. Many, many people have asked us to bring the vaccines that we have out to them. However, with the mRNA vaccines, that's really difficult to do because of the freezing needed. For the Johnson & Johnson, we can go out to places, and we really have to reserve that for people who physically and for many reasons cannot get to one of our mass vaccination clinics. So many, many people want the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Right now, because it's new, we don't have a large supply of it. The supply that we have the most of is Moderna. So for most people, the one that they'll be offered is going to be the Moderna two-dose vaccine, which is a highly effective vaccine, and it's a really good vaccine to get. And then what we'll do is we'll be prioritizing certain populations that are more vulnerable and will not be able to get back to a two-dose clinic. We're prioritizing the Johnson & Johnson for those individuals. And right now, it's still really difficult. For instance, this past week, we didn't get any Johnson & Johnson vaccines. And the week before that, we got 100. So it's a really short supply. And we really have to make it's a difficult choice for us in public health to have to choose who gets it. But we always use the same kind of metrics to decide. And it's based on equity. Who needs this the most? Who has the most barriers? Who's not going to be able to come back and get that second dose? Then ethically, it's the best choice to give it to those who are not going to be able to follow up on the series.
Do you anticipate the supply increasing? Is it somewhat uncertain? What's the outlook for
the
Johnson?
The supply should increase. It's just depends on how much of the federal supply gets allocated to states versus how much gets allocated up the chain to other vulnerable populations. And so maybe those get sent to developing countries. That makes a lot of sense when you're making that choice at an upper level. So if it comes to Oregon, we're putting in request for whatever amount that Oregon gets, and then that gets split across the counties, depending on population size, depending on how rural we are. So we really don't have a lot of control in that. We just put in the requests, and we use some of our data that we have. For instance, before we had talked about the essential workers assessment, where we've asked our employers to fill that out. I'm using that data to advocate to our state, here's how many people we have in fishing and in agriculture. And these are going to be populations that are going to have a difficult time getting back to a second dose within 4 weeks if they're out to sea or if they're, you know, at a different port. So we use that data to advocate to the state to get the resources we need. And so whenever we're asking you to fill something out, often we're using that to take care of our community.
Really, it's kind of that proof for the ask. Amy Snyder will be back after this break. We'll talk about where you can get vaccinated. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us with Amy Snyder today, Health Promotions Program Manager, doing so much work on COVID. And so timelines, Amy, things have sort of switched around, which isn't completely uncommon in our situation. What's going on?
Yeah, we've had some curveballs thrown at us, which we like, just because those curveballs are the timeline speeding up on us. So for local public health authorities, which any public health department is, we follow the state's Oregon vaccine sequence. So we have to follow whatever the sequence is, and that sequence comes with timelines. So eligible groups come in the sequence, and then they're only eligible once we get to that point. So originally, when this back half of the sequence was given to us from the state, there was a group six that was going to be eligible on Monday, March 29. And then there was another group, that group seven, that was going to be eligible on May 1st. And then the general public was going to be split into two groups, and they were going to be eligible the beginning of June and the beginning of July. And then on Friday of last week, the governor said, we're going to change that. change your plans, which is great. We want things to move faster. And if we were ready, we could bump up and start on group six now. And we were ready. So we got approval from our commissioners, and we got approval from the state to jump a week ahead in that timeline. And with that allowance came the state moving Group 7 up to April 19th, and then all the general public is now going to be eligible altogether on May 1st, which is fantastic. And this is because we have more vaccine supply coming in, yes. Yeah. And because we are able to get those who are ready to be vaccinated in, and they're vaccinated, and some of our appointments are staying open, and so that tells us that it's time to move to the next group. With all that said, Group 6, Phase 1B, Group 6 is now eligible, and you can get yourself scheduled for an appointment right now, and you could even get an appointment today because we have open appointments today, and they're going to be open until 10 a.m. So if you aren't scheduled and you're eligible, I would call the call center and get yourself scheduled. So let me tell you first who's eligible right now. So Phase 1B, Group 6 is people 45 to 64 with certain chronic conditions such as heart disease or cancer. There's a list that's on our wait list or on our website, or if you call the call center, they'll tell you what that is. Certain essential workers, which include people in seafood and agriculture, and agriculture would be food agriculture, seasonal and migrant farm workers, fish and food processors, think of individuals in a food processing factory or a plant, like a conveyor belt assembly kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then wildland firefighters. We also have people who are displaced by wildfire, people who are unhoused, including people who are being sheltered in, say, a hotel, or people who are staying with somebody on their couch and maybe moving from house to house. They are all eligible. And then also people 16 and older who are pregnant. All of those individuals are eligible for vaccination right now, and we have appointments that are available right now. So those appointments that are available for today at the Newport Fairgrounds Clinic, which is the largest clinic that we have, about 500, 600 people can get vaccinated per day there. Last I checked yesterday, we had more than 200 appointments available. They will stay open until 10 a.m., so you have just a little bit to get signed up. Call the call center. It's 541-265-0621, 541-265-0621, to get yourself scheduled if you're eligible right now. Also, all the past groups, people 65 and older, they're all still eligible and they can get signed up right now. If you sign up for the wait list and you're currently eligible, you will get the link to schedule yourself as an automatic reply in that wait list. So if you go into the wait list and start signing yourself up, you'll get that. And then we have Group 7 that will be eligible on April 19th. If you are in that group, which is pretty much a really broad group of frontline workers, anybody who really keeps society going, they are all going to be eligible on April 19th. And that may come faster, we are hoping, because we have appointments available right now, which tells us that maybe we're ready to go to Group 7. So we're going to wait and see on that, but be ready.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. And I think you really knocked it out of the park there. And if you didn't capture the eligibility piece that is on the website, call the call center. She said it, 541-265-0621, and they can help walk you through it. Amy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. So go get vaccinated and have a great day. Thanks for listening.